Es por un época. Si tú no quieres hablar conmigo, dímelo para yo no llamarte ni molestarte, porque nada más quedaba tú.
Real talk. Real people. Real stories. The He's Just Podcast. Yeah! Welcome, everyone, to another He's Just Podcast. I'm your host and founder of the He's Just a Social Worker Movement with another amazing show for you today. But before we get started, I want to remind everyone that this platform was built because way too often as people, we were overlooked or labeled. But this is no longer. Our plight and our fight is for anyone and everyone who feels a need to be understood. We are strong as individuals, but unstoppable when we unite. Teen suicide is a serious issue that requires attention and support. It is important for teenagers to have access to resources like counseling, helplines, and supportive communities to help them cope when mental health challenges arise. They need to find ways and learn how to navigate these systems during those difficult times. Meet Dr. Scott J. Kolbaba, a distinguished physician with a passion for storytelling. With years of experience in internal medicine, a background in the Marine Corps Reserve, he brings a unique perspective to his work. Graduating with honors from the University of Illinois College of Medicine and completing his residency at the prestigious Mayo Clinic, Dr. Kolbaba has been recognized as a top doctor by Chicago Magazine. His best-selling book, Physician's Untold Stories, has captivated readers worldwide with its collection of miraculous tales from the medical field. Inspired by his experiences, Dr. Kolbaba co-authored Clara's Magic Garden, a beloved children's book that promotes love, acceptance, and self-worth. Through his writing, Dr. Kolbaba continues to touch hearts and inspire others to find meaning in their own journeys. Dr. Kolbaba, welcome to our show.
Thanks, Jules. Great to be here.
The pleasure is ours. For some time, we've been back and forth chatting. And as far as me, listening to you and your path is something that really inspires me in the man, aside from the professional that you truly are. But tell us more. How do you get involved into this work?
Well, you know, I've been a doc for a long time, and I've raised 7 kids, and you know, with 7 kids, you always deal with all kinds of things that come up. You know that there's the bullying and the depression and you know the family issues and so forth. And I think one of the first things that I ran into was my daughter, and she's a mixed race. We adopted her, and she was being bullied on the school bus. And so every day she'd come home crying, I've been bullied by this one kid. And, you know, in our family, the boys tend to look after the girls. And mm-hmm. So my son, Nathan, recognized, you know, a big problem here. So he dressed up in he's a big football type. So he dressed up in his football gear and went on the bus with little Jordan. And, he said, "Well, who's the kid that's bullying you?" And she pointed him out, and Nathan went up to him and said, "This is my sister. You bully her, and you're going to have to answer to me." And that was the end of the bullying. Nothing happened after that, and she was perfectly fine. So that was kind of one of the first little things that I remember. And then there was an event that really touched me, and really changed me, literally. And I was called to the emergency room, or the emergency department, they call it these days. And I was called to see a 13-year-old girl. I'll call her Emily, just to change a name. And Emily, as I approached the room, I could hear sobbing in the room. And I thought, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. There's some big emotions going on here. So I opened the door, and there was little Emily lying on the gurney. It looked like she was as still as death. Mm-hmm. Her mom was holding her hand, and she was sobbing uncontrollably. The dad was in the corner, kind of with his head down on his hands. And Emily had overdosed on mom's pills and was in a coma. And I was, you know, it was the most sad thing I can imagine, seeing a beautiful little girl lying there, mom and dad just devastated. And so we admitted her to the ICU, we intubated her, we did all the right things, and she recovered. But the funny thing is, I didn't recover from that. It kept staying with me, and I wanted to do something, you know. And as a doc, I see individual patients, but I wanted to do more than that. So I thought, what can I do to you know, touch people all over the world? And so I decided that ultimately I'd write a book, Clara's Magic Garden, which would be about a little girl that was depressed and then ultimately came out of her depression. And I thought, you know, these kinds of shows and this kind of promotion would help also, because you know, there's so many people out there that are depressed. The statistics are 3 in 5 girls, according to the CDC, are sad and hopeless, which is a 60% increase in the last 10 years. 30% of girls are seriously considering suicide. That's a huge number, twice as many as guys, but 30%. So I decided to launch on a kind of a campaign to do something about that, and that's what we're doing. And we discovered in some of my research that one of the things that's most significant in helping with depression is purpose. Now, there's a lot of mental health workers out there, but there aren't enough for the epidemic that we've come across. So I was looking for something that would be inexpensive, that would not involve mental health workers, because they're in short supply. I have trouble finding a psychiatrist to see my patients these days. It takes months to get in to see someone. Mm-hmm. So I discovered that one of the things that is most significant in helping kids overcome the depression is purpose. If a kid has a purpose, and the American Psychiatric Association defines a purpose as something that you're passionate about, but also that helps other people in the world. And if you can get kids involved with a purpose, they tend not to be as depressed or not depressed at all. So that's the thing that we came across, and that's what we want to promote, because people don't know that. And if you can realize that your kids, for example, if you help them promote their purpose, they're going to be different kids.
Mm. Dr. Kolbaba, first and foremost, a lot of love and respect for you for stepping out of the box early, letting us know that there are ways that we, even as professionals, can do the extra, that we can do something more. So much to talk about in referencing Emily. But let's talk about the fact of you are now in the position to do something. And prior to you taking the step to write the book and to do different things, did you have like a dad moment? Did you have a, I don't care what my colleagues think about this moment? What was going through your mind as your heart is racing and your thoughts are going? Because I know that you're known for going the extra mile, but tell us more about that.
I mean, with Emily, you mean? Yeah. Well, you know, you see this little girl, this innocent little girl, age 13, lying there, totally unconscious, and you know your heart is beating a mile a minute. As docs, you never quite know if you're going to be doing the right thing. And so, you know, this is a life and death situation. There aren't many situations where, you know, I see a lot of stuff in the office. I see, you know, the usual things that everyone has: low back pain, you know, sore throats, diarrhea, you name it. And then when you're faced with a person that is close to death, that really gets your juices flowing and your heart pumping. And you know, you get a little afraid, to be honest with you. You get a little worried that, you know, if you don't do all the right things, that person could die. So I was terrified. And ultimately we got her going and brought her back. But just seeing her and just feeling so sad for the parents and everyone, because, you know, you've probably faced this, Jules, where people in the community, or I don't know if you have kids or not, but you know, our kids have had kids that they know that have committed suicide. Mm-hmm. And it's so devastating to everyone around you. It's not just the family, it's the colleagues, the friends, the acquaintances. So I just felt I had to do something to help prevent this, because it is an epidemic in our community now. It's a shame.
You know, you brought up some important points early from the CDC, and you talked about the issues around suicide. Suicide is the third leading cause of death in young people, talking about ages like 15 to 24. And the reports are stating that girls are more likely to attempt it, but boys are four times more likely to die from it. Now, is there a reason why boys are successful, if you will, versus girls? Could you tell us a little bit about that?
I think, Jules, it's probably related to testosterone. Guys are a little bit more aggressive, and at times, you know, you see more. And when you have fights in schools, it's mostly the guys that are involved with fights and not so much the girls. And so I think they are a little more determined, a little more aggressive. And so the statistics from the CDC are twice as many girls are depressed as guys. And girls, I'm sure the statistics are that girls attempt more suicide, but the guys are successful because, like I said, they're more determined and more aggressive, I think, in general than girls. Girls tend to be a little sensitive, which I think is why they tend to be more depressed than the guys in general. But it's a problem that crosses all male, female, LGBTQ groups. Everyone is affected by this.
You know, when we talk about the females and their symptomology around their risk factors, you know, the attempts stem from like eating disorders, PTSD, bipolar disorder, being a victim of dating violence and some sort of depression. But there is a lot to talk about how young people are being prompted into different things. And many people have talked about technology, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But I'm looking at this from a lens of the parents. Are they not existent? Are there issues that are overwhelming for them? Single household versus marriages. What are you thinking is happening around this?
Well, what's happened, I think, in the last 50 years is that parents have to work harder. When I was a kid, my dad worked and my mom stayed home. And so she was always there. She had a part-time job. But in those days, you know, people could afford to have a one income household. Now, everything has gotten more expensive. And especially in the last couple of years, everything is, our kids that are grown up are struggling to make ends meet. They're living paycheck to paycheck. And so when you're doing that, you know, what gives? I think the kids sometimes have to give. The parents are working, they're stressed, they're tired. And so the kids don't get the time. And like I was telling you before, one of the things that keeps kids from slipping into a depression is they're pursuing their passion. If the parents don't have enough time to spend with the kid and to pursue whatever their passion is, football or dog walking or band or whatever, then the kids are gonna fall by the wayside and lose a sense of purpose. And when the adults are so busy too, they don't have a sense of purpose either. They're just trying to keep the food on the table. And when there's not a person to model this purpose, then that's a big issue for the kids. That they don't have a mentor, a person that they can look up to.
You know, I love your answer because there's so much to unpack from it. There could be more money poured in from government, looking at this from this point of view, in community board organizations that can support this kind of work. I find that the relative work is really stigmatized around mental health in isolated groups, and how difficult it is for many of these teens to show up in group, to be there every day, to be there prepared, and using your word, to have a purpose or intent during this meeting. So it becomes extremely difficult to be part of that, because if they make it there, you know, what are the words of this group? You know, hello, my name is X, and I'm this and I'm that, you become stigmatized within your own groups and it becomes difficult. And I'm in agreement. You should have more of the positive things around you to help you bounce back out of that. Using your word again, the purpose, that if you had a group or had a scenario where people around you were trying to provide you not the medical office look, not the center for help look, more of a unity in friendship and mentors group kind of thing, I believe that that can be some of it. But there's so much to talk about when we're talking about this topic. Let's try to touch base on the suicide ideations when people are preoccupied with the thought of, you know, attempting. Tell us a little bit about that and how difficult is it to get those thoughts out of your mind when they start coming in?
I work in the adolescent psychiatric unit at Northwestern Medicine. And so we see a lot of teens, and the most common admission is teens that attempt suicide or have a suicide ideation. What I've found, and I talk with the social workers and the other docs in this psych unit, and I said, you know, what do these kids, do any of these kids have a purpose in life? Mm. And the answer was universally, no, none of them have a purpose in life. Now, there are some serious mental illnesses like bipolar and schizophrenia and so forth that you know, where people may hear voices and they're, you know, they're seriously ill, and those are the people that really need the medications to get out of this. But the ordinary kids, the ones that are suicidal, have suicidal ideation or attempt suicide, those are the ones that you know are frequently. Well, the most common cause that we see is bullying at school. Mm-hmm. And there was a story about a young kid. His name is Samir Mashwari, who had a thyroid condition when he was young, and he gained a lot of weight. And, you know, the kids would bully him in school, and they would call him the sumo wrestler. And they drew a picture of him on the blackboard one time. And put his name on there, the sumo wrestler. Can you imagine how devastating that would be to a young impressionable kid? Mm-hmm. Bullying has been a significant issue and with depression and the cause of many suicide attempts or suicides. The other thing that we see would be the social media. Now, social media can be beneficial by communicating with others and connecting. But the problem with social media is that kids, you know, who goes on social media and says, oh, my grades are failing. I'm not successful. Everyone wants to show that their life is greater than somebody else's life. So you look on the social media and you'll see your friends and acquaintances, and everyone's successful. Everyone's got nice clothes and so forth. You're trying to keep up with everyone else. You're trying to get as many likes as you can. And you can't. And when people finally realize that, they've made a major step. But, you know, young kids are impressionable. And you don't think you're as good as everyone else, that's a big step toward potential suicide.
You know, bullying is a major topic of discussion, obviously, in so many fronts, even from adults to adults. There's so much that can happen. And many of us who have dealt with it from the parent side, so to speak, I have a daughter, and I shared this before in another show, who was up against bullying. And it drove me to get into the work of social work. That was not my field. My field actually was in healthcare, and how to navigate systems and systems care on the administration side. But one scenario after the other kept piling up. And how difficult is it for a parent to listen to, like you shared earlier, when your daughter was dealing with something like this, you find yourself in a place of, let's switch places. Why don't you do this? Why don't you go there tomorrow and just punch him in the face? Why don't you step up to them and do something? Because you're already furious about what that is. And I see this way too often being in the education system. Obviously, it is a bear to deal with. But there are ways that we can continue to find supports, find adults. And those of us who think that snitching or telling an adult, it's the best step. And parents need some handholding in these scenarios because, like I mentioned, either it's a fight or flight for them as well. Will they respond positively? Will they do something that's negative? So we have to be careful as parents when we are approaching a potential bully. As far as social media, we can tap into that a little bit further. But more around that, it's so dangerous because appearance and status seems to be attached to this. And that negativity or positivity can be the step in the right and most times wrong direction. When we talk about the work that you've done so far, as a doctor, you obviously see patients and you deal with this, but this is a little different. When you are dealing with a parent who is hearing for the first time that their child had an attempt or had a plan, what is going through your mind? Is it the same script? Is it different? What actually happens for you when you have to talk to someone, a parent who is dealing with this?
Well, there's lots of different scenarios. There are some parents that are, you know, very loving, helpful for their kids. They are attentive. They're devastated by this. And so those are the parents that you reassure that they were doing all the right things. The child just needs a number of things and many times professional help and some medication. I try to tell parents that they need to listen to their kids find out what's going on. My wife loves to take kids in the car because, you know, the kids in the back seat don't think that the person driving the car hears anything. And so she loves to listen to what's going on, and she learns more about what's happening with our kids in the community with driving the kids than any other time. So, I tend to be pretty busy, but she tends to be the one that's working with the kids mostly. And she'll sit down and listen to the kids, you know, what's happening, what's going on. And, you know, frequently, you know this, Jules, that when you sit down with a kid, you'll say, well, how's it going? And they say, fine. And, you know, what's happening in school? Oh, nothing. So one of the things that we like to do is take kids for a walk. And we have a little neighborhood with a half mile circle, and we'll go for a walk with the dog. We have a Newfoundland, which is a pretty big beast, and they like to take the dog for a walk. And so, and then when you walk, it's pretty casual, and you know, then you can talk about the things that they wouldn't tell you if you just sat on and said what's happening with you. So we find that casual situations like a walk are incredibly beneficial. And when the kids have grown up, they come back home sometimes and they'll say, Dad, can we take a walk? And that usually means I need to talk about something. It's really cool. So we tell parents, you know, listen to your kids, educate yourself about depression, about what it is and what causes it. We encourage the parents to have the kids get healthy habits. You know, join some activities, join a sport, you know, get involved with exercise, lose weight, those kinds of things, things that will benefit them. Mm-hmm. There's a number of ways that parents can help. And the big one, though, I think, is just being aware of what the kid loves and pursuing that. When I was a kid, I got into balloons, these big, you know, balloons that take people up into the hot air balloons. Mm-hmm. And so my parents were a little bit crazy because they loved to have me pursue my passions. And so we went all over the Midwest to balloon festivals and learned about balloons. And I wrote to some of the balloon the people that had the balloons. And I'll never forget one in Michigan. We went to a balloon festival. I was really excited, and I saw one balloon go up about 60 feet and then the whole thing split open and the person came down and broke his ankle. He didn't kill himself. And that kind of ended my balloon passion. But, you know, if a kid has an interest, I think the parents need to pursue that interest, and it may cost a little money to take them around to things to maybe get a mentor. If a kid, you know, loves a sport, you want to encourage that. My son Nathan, the one that dressed up as in the uniform, was told by his coach when he was a freshman he loved football, and he was told by his freshman coach on the B team that he probably should not go out for football the next year. He was devastated. So we did all the things we could to help Nathan, you know, succeed. We got, you know, different coaching and exercises and things like that. And then the next year, Nathan made the team. Mm. And the next year, he wasn't playing very much, but one of the kids was hurt and they decided to put Nathan in, and he got 6 sacks on that, that day. And after that, he was playing on a regular basis. He loved it. He was the only one that went on to play Division I football.
Mm. You know what? Thank you for sharing that story, because sometimes when your number's called, you never know when that opportunity rises and it's your time to shine. One thing that I wanted to talk about that you did not say about the things to do, I'm talking about the things not to do now. You should not have adult conversations that are going to be deliberate and high in volume tone in front of your teenage children. If you're about to separate from your loved one, or there is some separation in the horizon, try your best to work this out, having a plan with your counterpart, in where you can decide, we will talk about this when we are alone, when the kids are at school. Let's plan ahead of time to make sure that things are correct, to avoid any kind of crumbling that may come from this. Let's not use drugs in front of them. There are many parents who are loosey, you know, Friday, let's buy, let's do this, we're going to party. Let's be careful, because I know that when kids see this, they're over-reporting, they're over, you know, thinking about what they saw. Let's not yell. And obviously, let's not talk negative to our kids, telling them that they're dumb, telling them that they're stupid, comparing them to another child. You know, this other child and you, same age, he's smarter, she's smarter, she's faster, you're here just a bum, you're this, you're that. That's something to be careful with. And, you know, let's not overshare. Many times we have problems like adults. I can't afford to buy you this, I can't afford to buy you that. And then you'll find yourself that your son or daughter, they're finishing the sentence for you. So what are you good for? You don't have it. You're never going to have it. And then you're caught in a scenario. So being careful about oversharing, I believe, is also a step to not to on the list of things to support your teens as they're going through these changes that they're thinking about. You know, the American Psychology website talked about over 20% of teens consider suicide. Why that high number?
I think it's all the things that we talked about. I think, you know, there's especially one of the things we didn't mention was school stress. Mm. It's very interesting that in the summertime and in the adolescent psych unit at our hospital, they close the psych unit because there are no kids that are depressed in the summertime. Isn't that interesting?
Mm.
Well, there are very few. So, you know, we normally have about a dozen to 15 kids in the unit. But as soon as the school's out, you know, the unit closes down. So that, in addition to what we talked about before, bullying and social media, the academic stress is huge. And then there's the interaction with the kids, you know, that are making fun of you or whatever, that contribute to that. So school's out, kids are a lot better. So there's a number of factors besides what we talked about, and certainly, you know, school stress and academic stress is a big one. Mm-hmm. You mentioned before about parents and what they shouldn't be doing. It was very interesting. When I was in my training, we did some psych rotations with a child psychiatrist, and we'd go into a room and there'd be the parents and the and the kid and myself and the psychiatrist, and invariably it was a very fascinating way to see how this psychiatrist could unearth the issues. And invariably one of the big issues was the parents and either a divorce or the kind of talk that you mentioned before about yelling and either yelling about each other or yelling at the kid. So those are huge factors. I was impressed that virtually every kid that we saw had some parental issues at that time that contributed to the severe depression.
Mm. Let's talk about your book. I mean, you have two, but let's talk about Clara's Magic Garden. And tell us who helped you put this book together as well.
My son and I decided to write a book. I've always wanted to write a kid's book. And after this experience with Emily, I thought I'd like to write something about a little girl that goes through a tough time and then comes out okay. And the essence of the book is that we have a little girl that finds some magic seeds in the woods, and she decides to plant them in her garden, and the seeds come up and it forms it's a little bush, and the bush is kind of ugly, and the plants in the garden don't like the bush because it's not very pretty. It doesn't have flowers like the daffodils. It doesn't look like the magnolia tree, and we actually shape the book to be our backyard. This is our backyard, a little bridge, magnolia trees and daffodils and so forth. And we have a little bush back there. And so the girl and the bush talk together and they become good friends. But the girl also doesn't have many friends. She doesn't, not very social at school. And toward the end of the book, the bush then becomes a burning bush, which is, a bush that turns red in the fall. It becomes the most beautiful thing in the garden. And the girl realizes that, well, maybe I'm special too. And so toward the end, they both realize that they're individuals and they're special. We used a bush because it's not quite as intimidating as a person. You can say things to a bush that you wouldn't say to a person. And the interesting thing is the girl becomes a success in life. She has kids of her own. She comes back after she moves away to see the bush. And she brings her kids to show them the bush. And it's in the fall of the year when the bush is absolutely gorgeous. And the sad thing is the girl says to the mom, why were you so sad to see the bush? And she said, well, when I was a kid, I could hear the bush talking. But now that I've grown up, I can't hear it anymore. Mm. The little girl writes draws a little picture, and on the picture is the bush, and it's talking to her.
Mm. Amazing. Great stuff. Yeah, Dr. Obama, thank you so much. Amazing story. And I will have that on my website as well. Clara's Magic Garden. You know, it is, I don't know if there's research and I have not looked at it, but let's just talk about it a bit.
Sure.
The draw that people have related to something that's non-living, the plant, sometimes is a living object, an animal. Sometimes is something that's sensory that they can hold and mold to ease them. It's interesting how people cue them off. But a lot of the things that we've talked about, why people are so angry, why people are so mean towards them, are they socially appropriate? Did they develop correctly? Did they witness violence early in their lives? Were they part of a marriage that dealt with a lot of violence? Was there issues within their home that created a dynamic that this child may have witnessed or felt? And that energy has remained with them. And that's why I think that they're drawn to plants. And it's no secret when someone is mad at you, they give you flowers. When someone is happy, they give you flowers. And ultimately, when you die, they give you flowers. They don't give you people. Why is this, do you think?
Well, obviously, flowers are beautiful. And it's an expression of love. When you give something that's beautiful, It's like giving love. So I think that's certainly part of the flower issue. We used plants in the book because, again, it's you can say things about a plant that you wouldn't say about a person. You wouldn't say the person is ugly, or you wouldn't say the person is belligerent, or that kind of thing, you know, in a nice kid's book. But you can say that about plants. They're inanimate objects, and so it's a little, and people then will relate to the plant being like a person, but not as objectionable as saying this person is ugly. And you wouldn't want to say that, but you can say this bush was kind of ugly because it didn't have, you know, flowers and things like that. So I think that's what we used the plants for instead of people. But I go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, to me, I just wanted to know more about the strategies that you think that you can share that are embedded in your book that can help parents when they're struggling with a child who potentially is depressed or may have symptomology of suicide.
Well, there are a number of studies that I've researched because I in looking at all this and looking at teen depression, the issues are there aren't enough mental health workers out there to help with all that's going on. The increase has been so exponential in depression and suicide that we're not equipped to handle that all. And so I was looking for some way of helping kids before they get into the big trouble. And there's a girl in or lady in California, Minnie Breedow is her name. She works on the Purpose Project, and she has found that if you can prevent depression from occurring rather than treat it once it's there, that's the real goal. And her contention is that if you can encourage teens to have to look at what teens love, take their passion, and then pursue that passion to develop their purpose, and then use that purpose to help others. Jules, how many times have you helped someone out and you felt really good about that? You know, you pay. There was a story about a person that paid the toll in the toll booth for someone that was right behind them, and the person behind them was so impressed that they paid the toll for someone behind them. You know how many cars went through that toll booth that did that? 50 cars went through that toll booth, and they paid the toll for someone behind them. So I think, you know, finding your purpose, pursuing your purpose, and then helping others with that is just the ticket to help prevent depression. And I think if or to treat it, and that's doesn't cost a thing. And parents especially can do that. And I'm trying to encourage parents to realize that this is kind of a new concept. Help your teen find their purpose. If you do that, they're going to wake up in the morning excited about the day, and that will go a long way to treating this epidemic of depression, and also not only treating it but also preventing it.
You know, kindness is free, and there's many ways that people can be kind. You just gave an example of someone paying the toll and so on and paying it forward. But there's so many things that we can think of to support someone. A lot of times I've noted that depression can exist and will exist in many ways in different fashions, losing a job, not passing a test, failing to write the perfect paper, being criticized by people that you may look up to. So there's many ways to think of the negative. I like to start from the positive aspect, no matter what the scenario is. Show that gratitude for something that really matters. Show gratitude towards thyself first, and then you move on to spill some of that towards someone else. Let's talk about the Purpose Project. Tell us a little bit about that.
The Purpose Project started in California. Minnie Breedow was the person that started that. And she has done a lot of research and has found that and her big passion is trying to, instead of treating depression, trying to prevent it. And so they're encouraging people to find their purpose. And it's not just the kids, it's the parents, because the parents will be the model for the kids. So if the parents find their purpose and then help others with that, that's a great example for the kids. And that's her contention. And it's been pretty successful. I'm trying to spread that word more and more, because it's, again, it's free, it's easy to do, and it just involves time. It involves paying attention to the person that you're trying to help, the teen that you're trying to help, either your friend or your relative or your kid. And if you do that, it's going to make a huge difference in their lives. And they're going to wake up in the morning excited to pursue that. We've had a number, you know, in our seven kids, we've had a number of kids that we've helped pursue their passion. My one son was a baseball player. He loved to pitch. And so he became a pitcher. He was he was going to be drafted by the Florida Marlins. And, you know, we encouraged him. We traveled all over the country, staying in little motels in the middle of cornfields, you know, with that. So that was his passion, and that was his purpose. My son Nate was with football player. We had a ballet dancer that we encouraged. So I think if the parents, especially the parents, take a great interest in the kids, help them pursue their passion, and then if they can show how that would help others, some of the kids would help some of their friends with you know, how to do certain blocks or pitching or whatever. That's a tremendous thing to help prevent a depression. And the kids wake up in the morning excited about what they're doing.
Find your purpose. Key words there, Dr. Kolbaba, sharing insight from a parent, a doctor, an author perspective. You know, there's so much to say about that. When you find your passion and you find your purpose, you feel at your best self. You are ignited because you're successful at this. But there are many times that parents can be overwhelmed. And I always relate to the work of taking your time and set goals that can be appropriate for you and your child. Sometimes you're a single parent and you are raising a child on your own. Maybe the other parent isn't existent, or maybe doesn't do as well as the other parent does, but we have to find ways. There are parents out there, let's talk about when they divorce and a male figure thinks that everything is related to money. And a lot of this comes from either child support. You know, she doesn't deserve this money. She wants to have this money for this, but you're forgetting the child. You're forgetting the connection, and you're forgetting that this is your child. Everything does not cost money. There's so much that you can do with your child to ignite that genius, to ignite that passion. Do homework with them, take a walk with them, dance with them, cook with them. All of these things you can do at your leisure and at your space. And usually it's funny how the child never usually gives up on the absent parent. There's something to be said about that. The child is always in that connection. And many of the mothers out here try to do their best by saying, you know, he is your father. You know, here's his birthday gift. Here's this to salute him. Remember to call him. There is a lot that could be said about mothers who are trying to that. So, you know, shout out to them, because I think that a lot has to happen on both sides. Just because the other parent isn't home, he or she can still be effective. I'm going to give you a sentence starter. I am at my best when
I'm helping someone else. And that's true for all of us. I think one of the purposes of life is to use your skills and your talents to do something good for someone else. And it's been shown over and over and over again that people that do that are better themselves. Lady Gaga, for example, has formed a whole organization based on kindness to others. And her contention is that if you're kind to someone else, you will be better yourself. And it's interesting that the person that you're kind to will tend to take that also and be more kind to someone else. So I think that the lesson for all of us is be kind. And you were mentioning about the divorce situation. As a doc, I see lots of, you know, parents that have divorced and the kids are in the middle of things. When there is contention between the mom and the dad, that is one of the most destructive things for the kids. You know, when you see the parents that can get along, that aren't complaining about the money situation, as you mentioned all the time, that's so hurtful for the child to realize that the mom and dad are at each other's throats. That is, that's a terrible thing for the kid to go through. Divorce is very difficult for kids, very difficult. But to have that happen on a continuous basis afterwards is something that, that then can certainly lead to a depression in the teen.
Well, let's talk about a parent who has to endure an attempt of a teen trying to commit suicide, but they are able to survive and they're sent back home. For a parent who has dealt with this, and there are times I've had a lot of patients that I've dealt with in my practice, teenagers, particularly girls who are cutters in the attempt, and they need to cope and they have different things. What advice do you have for those parents who are struggling with a child who failed at their attempt, but have a journal, a diary, and you're leery about these things? What are you telling them?
Well, certainly, you know, staying in touch with mental health professionals. And when a situation is that severe that the child attempts suicide, they need to be in touch with the mental health professionals. They need to be whatever medications that they need can be very helpful. So that's one of the things. And then it's the same old stuff. You know, it's paying attention to your teen, seeing what they're doing, taking a walk with them, taking for a ride, making sure they're involved with healthy habits, making sure that they're exercising, that that they're not failing in school, that they have a support system. You know, the friends that they have aren't bullies, that look at their social media, see what's going on. Those are all the things that cause a depression that the parent needs to be aware of. And if they are, that's going to help a great deal. There are still some situations where even if you do everything right and you know, the parents are perfect parents, there's still a situation where teens get into trouble and they attempt suicide. And those can be genetic conditions. Whenever we take a history on a teen that comes into the psych unit, you know, what's your family history like? Oh, my dad is depressed. My mother has bipolar. My aunt has, you know, those sometimes, you know, those are situations where you have trouble doing anything except medicating and working with the professionals on that. So, but generally it's the same things that you do to prevent kids from getting depressed.
I appreciate that answer. And most importantly, parents, do not stop loving your kids. Do not stop loving yourself. It is one of many issues that we as parents have to face and deal with. Finding time to pour out love and double up and triple up on that love so that your child feels the love. And love can help you overcome. Kindness helps you overcome. Goodness helps you overcome. How much does spirituality come into this, in this realm for people, so to speak, who are dealing with this? How is that helpful, if any?
You know, what we're seeing today is a more secular world. You know, religion is on the outs. Religion is being put down by many people, and it's sad because, you know, what do most religions believe? Most religions believe in love and kindness, in loving your neighbor, and that's a huge thing. And that's all the stuff that we're talking about. If you pay attention to your family, love your family, spend time with your family, most religions feel that the family is the center of the social system, and that that's the most important thing. And that's kind of what I believe too. I've got a nice job, I've got hobbies, but the most important thing in my life is my family. Mm-hmm. It's certainly my relationship to my Creator, but the family is the key, and that's what religions emphasize. So I think the decline in religion is having a great deal of impact on suicide and depression, because we're losing those values that are so important: love, kindness, and the family unit.
Talk a little bit about what you're currently working on, and you could bring in the work of your son. I know you guys are doing duo, combo, team, double team in this. Tell us a little bit what you guys are working on.
Well, we're promoting our book, and we're working with a number of individuals that are lining up some of the interviews. We like to get the word out. The big thing I'm working on right now is I'm just applying for a TEDx talk. I think those are wonderful times where you can spread things that are significant and people need to know. So what I'm working on is this very thing, that purpose, teens discovering their purpose, is one of the things that may help with this epidemic of depression. And I'd like to present that to a large audience, because I don't think people know that. I don't think people, when a child becomes depressed or they're not doing really well in school, symptoms of depression will be loss of interest in outside activities, not grooming, grades going down, not eating or overeating, and what we're trying to promote is that when the parents see that, to start getting involved with the kid and promote finding their passion, promoting that passion to their purpose, and then using that to help someone else. And that's what we're trying to do. And so this upcoming TEDx talk, which we hope to get in September in Chicago, should be a good platform. And so those are the kinds of things we're trying to do, get the word out that there is a solution for this crisis. And it's easier than you think, and it's not expensive.
Chi-Town, Dr. Cole Barber is ready. I cannot wait to listen and hear that. Oh my God, that's going to be amazing. Talk to us about what you do for self-care. I know that you're busy. You have so much pending, books and kids and walks and things that you do. What do you do for self-care?
Well, I like to pursue my passion too. And so, that's what wakes me up in the morning. This kind of a talk, the working with parents and pursuing these ideas is what gets my juices flowing. So I love that. I enjoy exercising. I have a treadmill in the basement, so I've got limited time. So I like to do the treadmill. We take our dog for a walk. My family is really a great solace to me. I've got seven kids. Three are adopted, but I've forgotten which ones are adopted now. And I like to talk with them on a regular basis. So what we're doing is we're doing some crazy stuff. I have 12 grandkids, and we've decided to take each grandkid on high adventure for 4 days, anywhere in the country that they want to go. So we take we get to know the kid a little bit better. We have a ton of fun. And that just perks me up and floats my boat. And then we have seven kids, so we take each of the kids on a little trip too somewhere and get to work with them and know them and know their kids, our grandkids, a little bit better. So that's really one of my passions is the family. And I think that I think we're losing some of that in today's society. And so I think for me, that's what I live for. And those are the things that keep me going and keep me excited about life.
Beautiful. You know what? I know you guys can't play Uno. Thank God that you got the adventures, because you're going to run out of cards, seven kids and grandkids. You need like double decks of Uno to like properly play this game.
That's funny.
Thank you so much, Dr. Cole Barber, for just sharing your love, for, like I said, dropping your doctor suit and just being you, just being the man. We are appreciative of your time and your expertise for this. And are there things that you've seen that have changed in the medical field? Like, as an expert in this field, are we getting better fighting against suicide or not?
I think what's happened is there's such an overwhelming amount of mental illness these days, and I think we're recognizing it more. And what's happened in the medical field is that there aren't enough people to handle it all. I'm an internist, so when I run into a real serious psychiatric issue, I like to refer to a psychiatrist, and it's almost impossible to find a psychiatrist these days. It takes 2 or 3 months to get in to see someone. And so what's happened in medicine is that the mental health aspect of medicine is overwhelmed. And I don't think we have enough people and enough resources to handle it all, which is why we're trying to pursue an alternative way of helping people through pursuing your passion and pursuing your purpose. So it's unfortunate that this has happened, but it really, and all of us, the primary care doctors, are facing treating more and more depression because the mental health professionals aren't available.
Mm. The floor is yours. Leave us with something, a message of encouragement to remind us of you, to remind us of the work that we still need to do in this area. The floor is yours.
Thank you. I think if there's a take-home lesson here, I think the take-home lesson is pursue kindness. Kindness will give you more rewards than the person that you're giving the kindness to. So any kind of kindness, if you do 2 or 3 things a day, you will be a happier person. And the studies show that. My other recommendation is love your family. Do things with your family. There's no other group of people that should be as important as your family. And pay attention to what they're doing. Stay in touch with them. Even if they've gone astray, you never know when they might come back. And always continue to love your family. And then my other recommendation would be find your purpose. Each individual should find their purpose and then model that for others to see. And purpose would be finding your passion, pursuing that as your purpose, and then helping others with that. And I think when you do that, things like a domino effect will help your children, will help others in the community. People will see what you're doing, and it'll be it'll spread like wildfire. And I think anything you can do that where you do some good in the world will come back to you in multiple ways.
You know, you just heard from a difference maker, a dedicated person who can make a big impact even with just a small action or a few words. Someone who improves the lives of others. One who rallies or encourages others to propel themselves forward and bring about change. Our plight and our fight is for anyone and everyone who feels a need to be understood. We are strong as individuals, but unstoppable when we unite. Tune in, friends, to another He's Just a Social Worker show, coming to another town real soon, near you. We out.
Please note that the views expressed here are my own and not a representation of my employers and clients. Thank you for listening. We're always here for you. Just message us and we'll get back to you within 24 hours. Thank you. More than just at He's Just a Social Worker. In memory of my mother, Matilde De La Rosa, this is dedicated to you, Mom. Miss you so much. En memoria de mi madre, Matilde de la Rosa, esto va dedicado a ti, mamá. Te extraño mucho.